The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. 6 minutes past nine on this Thursday, the 9th of April, 2026. How are you all keeping? I do hope you're very well indeed. It's great to have you on board. We're here with you until 11 o'clock and we've got a packed agenda keeping you across all the big topics that you'd expect us to talk about and conversations that matter. Your opinions really matter to us as well, and it's very easy to have your say, to get involved in the biggest conversation in the Northwest. 086 60 25000. That is the WhatsApp and text number. Don't worry if you've never messaged a radio station before. Your opinion, your views, what you have to say is valid and it's as important as what anybody else feels. 07491 25000 if you prefer to pick up the phone and talk to Caroline or Shannon, or if you want to email, it's comments at highlandradio.com. And just to let you know that we broadcast this show every single day for you to watch as well. The most convenient is YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, because you can watch it on your mobile devices, your laptop, or in fact, your smart TV. Most TVs sold now have the YouTube app inbuilt into them. So if you've never done it, stick it on, watch it. Most of our guests join us either in studio or via video. And it's also available for you across our Facebook pages. And obviously, again, the fuel crisis is dominating the headlines and dominating the highways and byways of Ireland. A third day of protests, one of the most effective protests, I would argue, in generations. It really is having an impact. Whether it's having a result, that remains to be seen. It's covered in the locals and the national newspapers. As the US and Iran agree to a two-week ceasefire here at home, groups of professional drivers, hauliers, contractors and farmers took their demands for the removal of carbon tax and fuel cap out onto the roads of Ireland. This is from John McAteer in the Tyrconnell Tribune. And in Easter week, they are parking up for the long haul on O'Connell Street in Dublin and have vowed to stay until they get a response from government to save their businesses. The government took in an extra $6 million in excise duty last month as the public paid a higher price for petrol and diesel due to the war in Iran. The Exchequer was the only one to profit from the higher prices at the country's filling stations. The Donegal News Blood Bike vows to keep services on the road. A frontline volunteer group delivering vital medical supplies across Donegal says it will not let rising fuel costs disrupt its life-saving service. Shane Laverty from Lisnennan in Letterkenny has volunteered with Blood Bike Northwest for the past 5 years, transporting blood, plasma, biological samples, breast milk and medical documents to hospitals across the region and across the country, in fact, as well. Operating entirely on charitable donations, the group is now dipping into reserves as fuel prices continue to climb. Because people have been so good, we haven't had to go standing with buckets, but it's getting expensive, Shane said. So that's the other side of it. The Derry News this morning: anger following dissident Republican parade. There has been widespread anger following a dissident Republican parade in Derry. A car was burnt out and windows of the corned beef tin were damaged after the annual Easter Monday unfinished revolution parade from the Cregan shops to the city cemetery. On to the Nationals now. And an interesting reaction from government to the ongoing fuel prices. I'm not sure if there's a full sense of how desperate people are out there or how powerful the movement is, or indeed how well supported it is, and I'll get to that in a moment. But reading from the Irish Times, the government was strongly critical of the fuel protesters in a series of interventions yesterday. Taoiseach Micheál Martin and Tánaiste Harris insisted that they would only meet representative organisations as the fuel protests headed into a third day. While some protesters said they would end their blockade if the government would sit down with them to discuss their demands, ministers insisted that they would only speak to organisations such as the Irish Road Hauliers Association and the Irish Farmers Association. In a statement last night, after a meeting between Martin Harris and Minister of State Sean Canney from the IRHA, the government said it would continue to engage with national representative organisations and keep the situation under review. So the Irish Road Hauliers Association, like, they're at the pin of their collar by their own account. And really, I think the protests aren't to receive reassurances that the government's keeping an eye on things. You know, this is about saving their businesses. Asked at a press conference if the Garda should act to keep roads open and depots clear, Micheál Martin said fuel depots will have to be cleared. There's no justification whatsoever for blockading fuel depots. It runs counter to what everybody wants, which is access to fuel on a timely basis. So the Taoiseach then, in an audio clip, and I'm going to play it for you now, he says he does not believe the ongoing fuel protests have the support of the majority of Ireland.
I do think people are annoyed, particularly if you get into your car and you want to get, you have a particular appointment and a timeline, and then suddenly you can't make any progress because the road is blocked. I do not think that's a legitimate form of protest. I think it's preventing other citizens from doing their normal daily business, depriving them of access to their livelihoods and to work.
So, I mean, I have a decent social media following, so I thought I'd put a poll up on Facebook, on my own Facebook page, because that's my private page and it doesn't speak for Highland Radio as such. And I don't block people, and I have a lot of different followers with different political beliefs, right? Some are very anti this, some are pro that, some disbelieve that, others believe the other. So it's a pretty broad cross-section of society, because as I say, I don't block people, so I'm not in some sort of a bubble whereby it's only I only see things that I like to see or only hear things I like to hear. We can do that on social media quite a bit, but I don't do that. I think there's four people blocked in its entirety on my Facebook page, but that was for very offensive or libelous stuff, not against me, but others, and two of those accounts no longer exist. So I put a post up on Facebook and asked a very, very simple question. And the question was, are you in favour or against the fuel protests? And I was flabbergasted by the response. To give you an example, you know these Red Sea polls that you see in newspapers or that you see quoted on this radio station or others with talk about, well, Fianna Fáil's at 22%, Sinn Féin's at 24%. You know, those types of polls. Well, they're normally based off a sample size of between 1,000 people and 1,500 people, and they end up with a margin of error of plus or minus 3%. So posted this on my Facebook page, and 4,500 people voted, which is really quite remarkable. It's a massive sample size. Is it skewed? I don't know. Is it scientific? It's the views of people that engaged with it, right? So maybe people will So what would you say the percentage of those in favour of the fuel protests is? Out of 4,500 people, 99.4% of 4,500 people are in favour of the protest, against 0.6%. That sounds like a wide margin. It couldn't be much wider, could it? But really, quite interestingly, if you look at the numbers, it even becomes more stark. So 4,000, well, this is going back a couple of hundred, over 4,300 people supported the protest. Those against, 25. Now, they could be against me, they could be, I don't know what the motivation to vote against it is, or maybe they were disrupted from going to it. So that is what a very, very large proportion of people, four times the sample size of a national poll on little old Greg's post, 4,500 people, 99.4% of those people support the fuel crisis. So to say that people are against them, I think, is not reading the room correctly. To say that people who were heading to Knock Airport or down to an appointment in Galway were disappointed or indeed perhaps angry when they were caught up in traffic, definitely, yes, of course, there are going to be people who are peeved about that. But does that mean that they oppose the fuel protests? I would argue no from the contacts that we've had, to be truthful. And I'm not saying... So, 4,500 people, 99.4% of those 4,500 people support the fuel protests. So I would say, and this is not... This is almost like as if to offer friendly advice to the government, I would say that maybe you don't fully understand. Maybe you're speaking to a group of people in Dublin who think, you know, farming is not important, or they don't realise how bread gets onto the shelves in the supermarkets. Maybe you're surrounding yourself with those people and need to sort of have a look across the country and go, you know, what do the people think, and how can we reflect what they think? And that might be important. That's just a bit of friendly advice, because when I talked about social media bubbles a little earlier on, I think there can be a media bubble, because I notice a lot of the newspapers, much of the coverage is taking a bit of a negative angle towards the protests. The papers are based in Dublin. Most of the politicians are based in Dublin. They're hearing the views of maybe a small group of people from Dublin in their group. I'm not saying Dublin people are opposed, but they probably don't even have a car. A lot of the people that are in politicians and journalists' ears probably cycle to work with a backpack on and clips around their ankles, right? So there definitely, I think, is... I genuinely believe, and this is an opinion piece, if you want to put it like that. It's not in any way biased. I think from looking at some of the newspaper coverage and looking at some of the political response, they are in a bubble of people maybe that commute to work in different ways, maybe don't fully understand how apples appear in shops. I don't know. But it certainly is not the view of the island of Ireland, or at least the 26 counties, it has to be said. So friendly advice is maybe look beyond the pale. And it might be helpful because, you know, I have no doubt that any government that's elected wants to do what's best for the people. But if you think the people are against the protests, you're not going to be making good decisions, I don't think. Friendly advice. What does all this mean for energy bills in the context of this very ropey ceasefire that's in the Middle East? Well, energy bills could still rise substantially despite the ceasefire deal between the US and Iran, experts have warned. The two countries agreed to the 11th hour proposal, announcing a deal less than 2 hours before US President Donald Trump's deadline for Tehran to open the Strait of Hormuz, which hasn't opened yet, by the way. The effective closure of the waterway, which was open before the attacks over the past month, triggered a massive spike in the price of oil and natural gas, hitting economies across the globe. Following the announcement of the deal, oil fell 14% to 93.93 a barrel, while natural gas dropped 17%. That oil's back up to 97 this morning. So there you go. Of course, you're being prepared to have to absorb these increases for quite some time. In the Irish Daily Mirror, the Irish Daily Mail this morning, Senator Eileen Flynn, Donegal senator, well, senator's not for a particular county, but she's from Donegal, has said she does not regret writing a character reference for her cousin, who this week was jailed for almost 5 years for swindling over 100 people out of €1.3 million in the US. John O'Brien, 28, was sentenced to jail after defrauding dozens of New England homeowners out of more than $1.5 million in a travelling con man scheme. O'Brien convinced more than 100 victims, some of them in their 80s, that their homes needed repairs and falsely promised to do the work, taking them for their life savings, prosecutors said. He often used a charming demeanour when approaching his victims, and some reported he used scare tactics to bully them into paying large sums. These tactics included pressuring homeowners by claiming their house would collapse if he didn't fix it immediately, and even causing some damage himself. Ms. Flynn, the first traveller ever elected to the Oireachtas, told the Irish Daily Mail that she didn't regret writing the letter, adding that Mr. O'Brien was her cousin and his mother, her aunt, asked her to write the letter. She said, "I babysat John. I sometimes walked into the school and everything else that went with what it's like living on site with John. He's first cousin. He's a first cousin. He went to America with good intentions. I wrote this letter a year ago last April. I didn't know the extent of the crime. However, I didn't focus on the crime. I focused on the young man that I knew, and I did give him a letter in support of his character. And it is just really unfortunate that John ended up in the situation that he's in, and the poor victims as well." It obviously is going to bring into question again character references being written for certain instances. But anyway, she says she has no regrets, but didn't fully understand the extent of his crimes. Just time for the Irish Farmers Journal. Farmers, contractors and hauliers who are protesting nationwide over the surge in fuel prices have vowed to continue their demonstrations for a third day, which we know they have. The protesters, the majority of whom are not affiliated to the Irish Road Haulage Association or farming organisations, have caused traffic chaos in Dublin City and other major towns around the country since Tuesday. There's a little bit of a, you know, there's lots of people joining the protest, but what I have noted is that some of them with right-leaning views have had their Facebook posts searched as if to say that like, I think you can have any political views and still be peed off enough about the price of petrol to go protesting. Do you know, to start labelling people because they've other views in other areas, I'm not sure how helpful that is. I'm not even sure what it achieves, because regardless of what your views, and we do live in a democracy, you are entitled to protest, whether you're a member of the Irish Haulage Association or the Irish Farmers Association. But there is a little bit of that going on, not particularly with the Irish Farmers Journal, but more generally. We have the leaders of the government stating that the protests are counterintuitive, I suppose you should say, that the people are opposed to them. We also have a poll showing 99.42% of people are in favour of them. The army as well is being asked, along with An Garda Síochána, and it puts them in a tricky situation. They're being asked to remove elements of the blockages, the critical infrastructure, etc. So not only do you have the leaders of the government opposing the protest, but you have them now drafting in the Garda and the army to remove elements of the protest, presumably outside the depots, etc. So let's get a sense of what people out there are feeling. Paul, you're a farmer, and I presume, you know, it's tough enough to farm at the best of times. What kind of an impact have these fuel price increases had on you?
Morning, Greg. How are you?
Good.
I suppose, like, speaking as a farmer, and I'm a worker too that has to go to work during the week and travel car, and I guess looking at the protests, I'd be very in favour of them. You know, but when they were mooted that they were going to happen last week, and you had a few like bus companies and whatever locally, and Letterkenny and that were pushing to, you know, go out and protest and get others, you know, behind them, and our national movement for it. And I suppose in the terms of the farming, like, it's a time of year where farmers are going to be using their tractors, you know, more than ever. Mm. Coming now into springtime, fertilizer, slurry, contractors are going to be needed, obviously, with, you know, the contractors do a big bulk of the work now in any county. And I think those contractors know, you know, more than maybe even the farmer, how much this is going to cost in terms of the rise and diesel. I think I heard a contractor saying yesterday that it was, it went up so much, and that the government would be taking taking 16 euro for every hour of diesel he was burning with his tractor in a field for working for somebody else or working for himself. So, you know, it's going to hit hard, and you'd think that food prices will, you know, as high and all as they are now, that they potentially will go higher, and this all affects everyone across the board. And you know, the protests, led by haulage groups and bus operators and farmers and contractors, and that you can see why they went out protesting. And you know, by all accounts, they're talking about how they tried to have dialogue with the government and the transport minister, and that, and it fell on deaf ears. Basically, there was nothing coming back, so they were getting nowhere. And therefore, I was, you know, proud looking on that, you know, a group of people, you know, business people that were suffering were going to try and, you know, highlight it and do something about it and try and get a resolve to it. And, you know, I'm a bit disappointed, you know, yesterday hearing, you know, the government speak, you know, outside the Dáil, and, you know, we're sort of going down the road of vilifying the protesters now.
Well, there's a couple of things going on. A couple of things going on at the same time. And I'm saying this objectively, and I'm only observing too. You do have that coming from government, but you also have people in influence on social media trying to connect the protests to the far right, if I could use that phraseology, just so people know what I'm talking about. I don't like this far left, far right, to try and discredit the protest. So there's two things happening at the same time here. So they're ignoring the tractors, they're ignoring the lorries, and they're talking about, well, there's far right elements. And that is to discredit the protest, to make it seem sinister.
Of course it is, yeah. And, you know, in reality, if we went down as a people from Donegal, whether it was Mica or whatever, and you went down to protest in Dublin, or a city centre, was specifically Dublin. But you're going to have an element of people, you know, that are far right minded, or
but it's,
you know,
a cross section of society. It's a cross. If you cut a 10% out of the middle of society, you're going to have people with all different views in it, whether you like all of the views or not. We are as a society.
Absolutely.
Now, you've made a point about whether or not, say, for instance, this was a big company kicking up a stink, it might be different. Like, so I'm not sure if you're on about the billions that we spent to try and make sure that we paid our money to Apple. I don't know if that's the kind of thing you're talking about. Or,
yeah, well, I suppose it's the way I would look at it is, I suppose, thinking, you know, about what the government are, the Irish government, to us, and they're meant to, you know, we'll say govern us, fair enough. But if we go back to the formation, and we're only after coming out Easter, where you had Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael standing at commemorations and different things and talking about, you know, how they're the sort of the flag bearers now, or leading us as a people. And they making the decisions that, you know, that we're willing to happen. And that was at the beginning of the state, and the proclamation was, you know, the government was tacked for the people, you know, in their interests, and listen to them. And I feel that this is an example, a modern day example of where there's unrest on the ground, because people have been squeezed to the pin of their collar, and they're seeking an intervention. They see and suspect that there's money there that could be used to intervene, you know, in a meaningful, you know, way, and see to get us through this difficult time. And the government are basically ignoring them, or made a token gesture a few weeks ago, you know, by dropping, you know, some form of tax or some sort of rebate.
Just to give an example to that, if you average it over the year, and given how much of our GDP that we contribute to the future fund, this is for rainy days into the future, 1.5 billion was collected in 3 months, was put away, 1.5 billion was put away in the first 3 months of this year. That would, if it was utilised for the rain that we're seeing at the moment, and this is the lowest estimate I could find, it would reduce the price of a litre of petrol or diesel by 33 cent for 2026, every single litre. And dependent on which maths you look at, it's upwards of 50 cent. So that 1.5 billion that we will be putting away in the first 3 months of this year would reduce petrol and diesel per litre by 33 cents for everyone for the rest of 2026. And I think when people see statistics like that and say, well, what are we planning for 2040? Because if everything collapses now, what's left in 2040? You know, it's not going to be a rainy day. We're already going to be flooded. And people struggle to make sense of that. And it's not explained, the logic as to why we're talking about a rainy day in 2040 when it's piddling down right now.
Yeah, no, it's hard for people, I suppose, to take that in. And, you know, when they're talking about, you know, a rainy day in 2040, you know, it's going to be, you know, it would be very worrying if it's, you know, if it's going to be a lot worse than something that's happening now, and the sort of what the shocks we're having to economies due to, you know, maybe unforeseen circumstances and things out of our control, you know, like in America and the Middle East and that. But no, I don't think people, you know, buy that. They haven't time to wait on intervention and help, you know, on the ground. People, you know, are suffering now. The cost of living's never been higher. Cost of rents and whatnot, you know, that's all understood. The government understand that too. And, you know, was my look on it is, with them understanding all this, why can they not, you know, take action, decisive action? Like, I heard a minister saying yesterday that Ireland had already taken the most decisive action on this fuel crisis across Europe, that they were one of the leading countries, you know, to step. But when you look into it, and I did look into it, that's not the case. You know, there's countries like Greece, for example, they brought on a cap on what the retailers could sell at, or the distributors could sell to the retailers. They even went further and put on, you know, looking at the food prices and stuff that they could, you know, push on an inflation there too, and maybe explode in 2026. So they've put on a mechanism where they're going to fine the big supermarket chains if their profits rise this 2026 above where they were in 25.
Mm-hmm.
So they have the power to do that. Now, if we were looking for the same intervention from the Irish government, we'd hear from the ministers or the Taoiseach or whatever that we can't get involved in commercially sensitive matters and stuff. But then in other parts of Europe, that's just, you know, it seems to be that they can get involved, you know, if the world's there. And, you know, I'm only taking Greece, but Spain and Germany, France and all, they've all taken measures to try and help their citizens on the ground, you know, with, through this, you know, challenging time with fuel prices.
All right, listen,
out of control, basically.
Thanks for your insight, Paul. I do appreciate it. And good luck with the season ahead. I hope there is some respite. Linda, how are you?
Morning, how are you?
I'm good. Right, so what's your reaction, I suppose, to the government's reaction to this crisis we're facing at the moment?
I think really the comments and statements that were released yesterday were quite very dismissive of what the situation and what's happening, and quite frankly, in my opinion, out of touch with how people are really feeling, of how people are really struggling with the fuel crisis on top of what already was a high cost of living, and the repercussions of the fuel increases are affecting that as well. You know, your groceries, everything has risen significantly in the last 6 to 12 months. And I think it's to be so dismissive of the people who have decided to start speaking out and taking a stand. I think they've read the room wrong, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Do you have faith in them to read the room right, to maybe rethink what public attitude is out there and look at what else they can do to try and address the situation?
I would like to think that they would. You know, it's people that are elected into a position, in my opinion, are there to work for the people of the country.
Yeah.
To listen to the people and engage with the people. And, you know, to me, it's quite simple that that's what they should be doing. You know, you can't just write people off or label them whichever way you want to label them. When majority is, they are just ordinary working people asking them to listen to how tough things are. You know, I certainly hope that they start paying attention.
Okay. All right. Listen, thanks very much, Linda. I appreciate it. I was just looking through the petrol and diesel prices through a organisation that looks at them. One of the lowest, actually, believe it or not, is Ukraine, which is currently under bombardment from Russia. A litre of petrol in Ukraine at the moment is €1.48. A litre of diesel is €1.80. Spain was referenced there. At the moment, a litre of petrol in Spain is €1.55. A litre of diesel is €1.85. Significant differences there, of course. And we're pretty high up the table. €1.94 that they're tracking at the moment for petrol, €2.10. For diesel. But if you go to Moldova, they've obviously had some sort of an intervention there, because their diesel's 168 and their petrol's 146. Let me see where else there is. Most other places, Bulgaria, interestingly as well, 144 for petrol, 165 for diesel. And on it goes. Thomas, sorry for holding you there. Thomas Costello, how are you keeping?
Good morning, Greg, to yourself and your listeners. Yeah, not too bad, Greg. It's funny, I'm actually on the road here this morning. I'm heading down the country here. I'm actually in Northern Ireland at the minute. I've never seen the roads so quiet as they've been this morning. There's nobody travelling at all.
It's you see,
very, very quiet.
This is the effect, isn't it? Right, so you have a different perspective on this, obviously, if you, between the boat, the car, the van, whatever it might be, but also as a promoter. What's the story?
It's not good out there, Greg. I suppose, you know, I suppose to give you an example, I suppose Caroline contacted me yesterday evening just regarding, I was involved there, probably the first festival of the year. I suppose the background of this, Greg, I suppose I go into Greenfield sites and set up events with marquees and leave a turnkey product where we set up a marquee, we do the production, we book the bands, run festivals, and that's what we do. That's part of our business. So what we do is obviously our greenfield site in electricity. So we have a 45 kVA generator that obviously runs on diesel. So we set up for a fantastic festival, and I want to congratulate the Crawley Committee as well on such a great event. So we ran the festival of the Easter, the second year running, for going from strength to strength. So we kicked off our generators on Thursday evening to get our coolers going in the bar, to get our CCTV keep monitoring the site overnight. That ran right through to Tuesday. We burnt 375 litres of agriculture and green diesel. So what we do is, when we set up with that there, we've got a fuel bowser on site to keep topping up the generator over the weekend. So what we do then, once we finish, we replace the diesel we used for moving on to the next event. So we always carry X amount of diesel to run stuff for the weekend. Mm. For us to replace that 375 litres of diesel yesterday evening, through no fault of the supplier, the garage can only work with the prices they're getting. So to replace that there, it was €3 short of €700.
697
for electricity 13. To run that event.
185.9 per litre. Yeah. What would that have been 2 months ago?
Well, the easiest way to put it, Greg, is them. If you look at the gauge in my picture, them figures are back to front. It should have been €375 for 700 litres of diesel. If that makes sense to
yeah,
you.
Yeah.
They're actually back. They're back to front, Greg. And just to give people a bit of an insight on how, you know, the post the fuel thing works, and you know, to lead on to, I want to explain something else to you about this too, and how dangerous situation we are in at the moment. We speak about farmers, and we speak about buses and hauliers. They're all 100% correct what they're saying. One of the most industries in this country that's absolutely on its knees at the moment, that's at breaking point, and we're going to reach this breaking point before the bank holiday, which is less than 4 weeks away. And I've spoken to people up and down the country for this year. It's the entertainment section and the tourism, hospitality. They're absolutely on their knees. And I'll explain that to you why they're on their knees. The disposable income, which our industry depends on, is down to as little as €100 per month, Greg. Now, that's astonishing to think that's how low it is, but that's actually where it's at, Greg. Mm. So if there's no disposable income, we're the last part of the chain, Greg, where people need that money. You know yourself, Greg, what it costs to go out now for a night. It's so expensive. So we are really, really struggling. Like last weekend there, Greg, the amount of events that was cancelled this weekend due to weather forecasts. Yes, the weather wasn't good. We didn't get the wind. I monitor the weather all the time. I live on an island. We're monitoring the weather 7 days a week. We had a lot of rain. It wasn't enough to cancel events. Events are being cancelled. Major acts are being cancelled due to the cost of living in this country.
Do you think people were using the weather as an out?
100%. Because people, you have to, if you're running an event now, Greg, you have to be prepared to hold the line and see what comes in the night. There's no such thing as these big pre-sale tickets like there was after COVID. People now decide on the night where they're going, etc., etc. Okay. We ran a very successful event, but you have to go to the line. But back to the story with the fuel, Greg, just let people know the nuts and bolts of how the fuel thing works for companies and business. Like, I work with a very well-known, there's loads of different companies with fuel cards. I've got a fuel card. We're a well-known company in Ireland. The way it is, I've a deal broke with them there where my diesel, we'll just say, for example, it's €2.15 at the pump. My diesel is always 4 cents a litre cheaper. So I have a deal that if it's 2.15, I get a 2.11. If it's 2.20, I get a 2.16. So that's the deal. The reason for that is it's very easy to track your VAT return every 2 months because you get a statement stating what diesel you burned. Now, I suppose I'm unlucky, but also unlucky that I'm in a position that I can get my VAT back on my fuel, which is 23% on road diesel, which I burn an awful lot of. Give you an example. I've done 4,000 kilometres in Ireland Paddy's week. Very lucky that I do production and manage a very well-known band in Ireland. So I've done 4,000 miles to cover 8 gigs Paddy's week. I had to fill my van 6 times, an average cost of €140 per fill, Greg.
Mm.
So this is not really sustainable, and there's so many other. We're lucky enough that we're running a Volkswagen Crafter van, and we can get our gear into that there, and the lads all travel. That's me travelling, that's not counting the van travelling. So you can double that. But a lot of these acts that's maybe a little bit bigger than us are running lorries. And then they're not getting the numbers to come out to
the event.
So
yeah. It's an interesting insight.
But you see, Greg,
a different part of industry, yeah.
But But just one other part, one point that's worth noting here, Greg, and I've done this. So, as I say, I get 23% back on my diesel, on my VAT return. Up to about 3 weeks ago, it was cheaper for me to buy my diesel in Northern Ireland. If I was going through the Northern Ireland, which I am today, it was cheaper to buy the diesel in Northern Ireland. Obviously, the VAT rate is different in Northern Ireland, which is 20%. You can't claim you're not allowed to claim your VAT back in the north. You can. It wouldn't be worth the hassle. Mm. You have to go through your accountant to do it.
But the difference between north and south was so wide, it was to not claim back the VAT and buy the diesel in the north, you were better off. Yeah, okay. Brilliant. Oh, brilliant insight. Thanks very much. It's a nightmare, but it's a brilliant insight. Thomas, thank you so very much indeed. Thomas Costello there. So, listen, the crisis we're in at the moment is affecting people in all different levels. So in terms of a big farm, it's about scale. In terms of Thomas's company there, it's about scale. And then let's get it back down to just the reality of us normal people as well and the difference it makes to our pay packet, because you can't do an extra week's work in a week to make stuff up. We have our hours, we have our pay. William, sorry for holding you there. And yours is the typical example. The majority of people are affected by this. It's your wages or the wages in the house being worth considerably less money. And what's your situation, William?
Well, good morning, Greg. Our situation would be my fiancée, she's a carer there, and I have a niece as well who's a carer in the community, and they do a lot of driving. They would do a lot of driving now. They would, for instance, my fiance there would drive like from Balmafay to St. Johnstone, back up to Kerrygordon, to Castlefan, maybe back to St. Johnstone again. You know, a lot of driving constantly all the time. And we have worked it out there. She's going to be down about 200 euros on her monthly pay packet.
That's massive.
And that is something, you know, at this day and age. I mean, our shopping used to be 80 euros a week, and it's up now to 110, and getting this hat now on top of it again. And the niece there as well, she has a young family, three young weans, and to struggle, she's just started the care. And, you know, they're looking at maybe doing extra hours to make up for the shortfall of the couple of hundred euros, but they're actually looking at the routes to see if it's going to be worth their while. You know, they're kind of looking, well, is it worth my while driving to St. Johnstone to do this half-hour call and all the rest of it? And that's just, as I say, to take a tour, at a minimum of 200 euros of a hat on the month pay packet, you know. And it's just getting to the point where, and I know the hoilers and the farmers, I do a bit of farming myself, I got fertilizer the last day there, and I couldn't believe the price of it.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it?
That's just getting to the point where I think this government just does not care about the Irish people at all. I just don't think they care. They seem to can run and give money to other countries and do this and that. And when it comes to Irish people in this country here, I just think they don't give two hoots, Greg.
Mm.
They couldn't care less. I mean, these people here, it was on about the albeit you have to keep the emergency services on the road, but these carers are out here every day, and let me tell you, they do get a small bit of money on their wage packet for their diesel, but I mean, it doesn't even touch the sides.
Yeah, and just for context, and I don't know if this makes it feel better or worse. I suspect it's worse. This increase in fuel to your fiance is effectively the equivalent of a 1.32 euro per hour pay cut. That's what it's working out as. I mean, that's terrible. And I know carers aren't overpaid, so that 200 per month works out at 132 per hour of a pay cut, which is crazy.
Yeah,
in such an important job.
Say, Greg, yeah, they're not on big wages, and as I say, to get this cut on top of it, and it's not an easy job. It's a difficult job. It's a stressful job. These carers, what they do in the community, and as I say, for what they're doing it for, and to get another hat on top of it, like these carers are not going to, they're not going to keep doing it.
No, and I would like to see the state try and do the work or pay for the work that they're doing. It would be a nightmare. William, listen, thank you for that. I do appreciate your time. Hello there, Jessica. It's Greg here. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
I'm all right. Who has a severe listening problem?
government in general.
What's your feelings about these the protests and the state's the government's reaction to them, Jessica?
I'm totally behind it. You were just talking to my uncle there, actually, William.
All right, okay. Oh, you're are you a carer? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm the niece that he's talking about to the three young kids. No, it's hard. Like, I think everybody's struggling, and I don't think government really cares, to be honest. They're lying in their own pockets, and the rest of us can't heat our houses or put fuel in the car. And as William has said, like, I've debated about leaving my job because I'm making on average $1,500 a month, and over $500 of that's going on fuel alone.
Wow. That's astonishing, isn't it? That's a third of your income.
Yeah, like, this week alone, like, I worked all weekend there from Friday. And on Friday, I put €50 under the car, and then on Saturday, I had to put €75 in. So because it was €135 over the space of 4 or 5 days, like.
How could anyone justify that? Like, and that's just to work. That's not, that's just so you can go and do your work, but the very important work of going house to house and looking after people.
Yeah, that's not even including school runs or, you know, going out for groceries or doing any other errands that we have to do. Like, it's crazy money, like.
And the bills that come as well, too, of course.
Yeah, like, our oil tank has been empty for weeks, like, and we're just not in a position to fill it. In Donegal, it's averaging €850-900 to get 500 litres, like.
But is it crazy? This is a really interesting insight, Jessica, and I really appreciate your honesty, that you've got someone like yourself who's working really hard in a very important part of society, home help, caring, etc. And you are not filling your oil tank because you can't afford to do
and
so. Like, I mean, that's
and
crazy.
And, you know, like, we're a two-person income household.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So I have a partner, I have a husband there too, and he's bringing in upwards of $500 a week. Like, and that's just not possible. Like,
you have a partner and a husband, or are they the one person?
Sorry, a husband. I'm only recently married.
I was going to say that's a three income family nominee, Messon. Yeah, exactly. So, and then I presume you've thought, if I packed my job in and stayed at home, probably wouldn't have to pay childcare or whatever. However, you have to sort that out. You must work it out in your head and say, would I actually be better off working sitting at home? Like, that's crazy.
Yeah, well, like, I'm making less than $300 a week. Like, so I would say, you know, if I was on the dole, I'd probably get maybe a wee bit extra. I don't know.
And
you know, I love my work, and that's the only reason I've kept going to it.
Well, Jessica, I mean, it's a remarkable insight. It's a remarkable insight into the incredibly difficult work that you do, and I really appreciate it. That's shocking, and I hope the powers that be are listening to this, that they hear it.
Yeah,
because that's a shocking reality.
And to add to that, you know, because I'm working now, there's no medical cards. Like, I'm wearing too much. But then at the same time, we're living in a mobile home. We've applied for mortgages. We can't get accepted because we earn too little, apparently. We can't go on the housing list because we earn too much, apparently. You know, as a young married couple, there's no way forward.
No,
like.
No, it's very frustrating. Wow. Listen, I hear it. I know it. I understand it. But just hearing it directly from you, Jessica, you know, it's this... something seriously amiss if we're such a rich country and hardworking families like yourself can't get a mortgage, can't fill the oil tank, and even are wondering, is it worth working? There's something seriously wrong with how the country is set up, Jessica.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, listen, best wishes to himself and the family. Thanks so much, Jessica. I really appreciate you speaking to us.
All right, thank you.
All right, and keep up the great work that you do for as long as you can justify doing it, of course. Dozens and dozens of you, as you can imagine, have been commenting on the fuel protests and the fuel crisis. We'll be getting to those as the morning wears on. But now an important conversation, and we're joined on the programme by a familiar voice, Councillor Joy Beard. Good morning, Joy. How are you?
Good morning, Greg. Good morning to the listeners. I'm fine, thank you.
It's great to have you with us. And we've got two less familiar, but equally as important voices and faces. And that's young Oscar. Hi, Oscar.
Hello.
Lovely to chat to you. And his mum, Melanie. Hi, Melanie.
Hello, how are you?
Good. Now, there's a show that has been featured or has been added to Netflix. recently. And, you know, for a lot of people consuming Netflix or TV show, it's whether it's entertaining or not, whether it's informative or not, whether we learn something or we don't. But for others, these programs can have far more significance. And I think that's the case with I Swear, which has been very... very broadly well received, Joy. I'll start with you because young Oscar sitting to your left has Tourette's. And how important has this film been, and tell me why?
Well, for me, we actually attended the Northern Ireland premiere of it, me, my sister Melanie, and her husband, just to see, you know, raise the awareness. We were hoping this movie was going to raise awareness to the condition, which it did. It definitely did. There was times we were sitting there, Greg, we were crying 1 minute, and the next minute, you know, we were laughing. But that's the way the film is made. You know, this was a remarkable person and his journey with having this condition of Tourette's. It was an inspiration to see it. And as you mentioned, Oscar has Tourette's and is currently going through it. He was diagnosed about a year and a half ago. So we're just trying as a family to see what supports we can do for him. And then his mum had a big decision whether to let Oscar watch that movie as well. And it was decided that Oscar would watch it. So Oscar then watched the movie then and it went on to Netflix. But really it's about raising awareness, Greg. People don't understand the condition. It is quite rare. And a lot of people associate Tourette's with swearing, you know, with bad language, but that is not the case. That's a very small minority, and Melanie will probably tell you a bit more about that, but it's a small minority that does have those symptoms. Oscar doesn't have those symptoms. His Tourette's is developed in a different way, where it's different kinds of tics that he's experiencing.
Yeah.
Well, let Oscar tell you.
I'll come to Oscar in a second. I just want to speak about the sort of lack of understanding with you, Melanie, for a moment, because I think there have been some quite high-profile people, Lewis Capaldi springs to mind, that maybe changed the perception of what Tourette's actually is. For a long time in the media, it was about involuntary swearing, and that is definitely how it affects some people. But it's amazing when you have someone with a higher profile, or when you have a film like this, it begins to break down those sort of notions. How important as a proud mum, as a loving mum, is that?
A very proud mum. Lewis Capaldi is Oscar's hero. The song Survive. I think Oscar, for a long time, Oscar is very good at suppressing his tics, but then that makes it worse when he has an episode. So these people and this movie, getting it out there, letting him know that he is Superman to us and this is him and we can't change it, has made him come out of the shell a wee bit more. And so we're very, very proud of that.
Oscar, what did you think of the film?
It was very good. I don't know what to think, because 1 minute I was like upset and then 1 minute I was like pure laughable.
And did you feel that it kind of reflected how you feel at times?
Yeah, sometimes.
Because it might be hard maybe sometimes for you to explain to people who don't know you what it is that you have and how it affects you. And I suppose if they're educated by a film, it makes your life a wee bit easier.
Yeah. Anytime I say I have Tourette's, people think it's don't really say bad words.
Yeah. And talk to me about Lewis Capaldi, because I mentioned him and I didn't realise you were such a big fan of his. What is it that you like about Lewis?
The way his Tourette's don't stop him anymore. And I got to go to one of his concerts and I got front row.
Oh, wow. I was at one of his concerts.
You got a thumbs up from him too, didn't you?
Yeah, I was at one of his concerts and, you know, it's astonishing how you see beyond his Tourette's. It doesn't matter. You just see a man who's incredibly talented. That's it. And I suppose that's what he does. So Joy, I suppose part of what we're doing is to continue the conversation that started by the exposure, you know, the coming out of the shadows, so to speak, with films like I Swear. That's why it's important.
Yeah, well, it's more about understanding and making people aware. So as they understand the condition, understand what Oscar's going through when he is having a bad episode. You know, as I said before, a lot of people think that it is to do with swearing, but with Oscar, you know, it was vocal tics. They're called vocal tics, but it was more like a clicking sound in his throat that he couldn't control. Then it did actually move to his chest. He had chest tics, which people don't realise can even happen. And that was causing a great deal of pain. Greg, then he had twitches in his neck. Obviously, that then gave him pain in his neck because they were reoccurring so often. At the minute, it seems to be tics in his eyes. You know, his eyes would be ticking uncontrollably. So it isn't just one thing, you know, but...
He constantly thinks about how other people's going to see him. Like, at the minute, he's doing like these eye rolling.
I'll tell you what I see, Oscar. I see a very handsome young lad here, to be honest with you, and I didn't spot any of that. So you relax yourself.
If you roll your eyes, you roll your eyes.
It's okay. Don't you worry about it, Oscar. We all have our own little ways. I know yours is a little bit different, but the one thing. It takes a long time to realise, and you have to get very, very old. People don't really notice you as much as you think you do. Yeah. We spend our teens and our 20s thinking everyone cares, but really they care about themselves. So you just be as happy as you can be. Melanie, you, when did you start seeing sort of indicators? And I presume initially, like lots of things, you just put it down to, you know, just natural development or habit or what?
Well, Oscar would always have done like a clearing of the throat.
Yeah.
And to be honest, it used to annoy me. He'd say, Oscar, don't do that. Don't do that. He used to do clearing of the throat. And since being diagnosed, they have said that is an early sign of ticking and Tourette's, that is probably one of the first ones that you'll do. But he's just a superstar.
And so in terms of... go ahead, Joy.
He's really trying to be an advocate for Tourette's, to let people know how it affects you. Like, it was a big transition. Oscar was in a very, very small primary school. All of his friends, he grew up with them. So now he's transitioned to the bigger school. So there had to be maybe a bit more understanding, a bit more explaining now this year about his condition to his peers. His school have been terribly supportive, you know, in Oscar's condition. And even the teachers didn't really understand it, Greg, and are trying to learn to understand so they can support Oscar more, because it is a daily thing. It's not something that goes away. Yes, he can have better days than others, but it's constantly there, you know. And Oscar then the other day went into school with, you'll see us all with our pins on to raise awareness for Tourette's. But Oscar went in then to his class, you know, and explained how Tourette's affects him and gave them all the badge that they're all proudly supportive of Oscar.
In your own words, and I don't want to put you on the spot, like, talk, what do you want to say about your Tourette's?
I just want to, like, spread the word, just to let people know.
I was going to ask you, do you sing? Because we need our own Irish Lewis Capaldi, but not everyone can sing. But what do you enjoy doing? Do you like gaming, playing sports, art? What do you like doing?
Sports.
David Beckham has Tourette's, so there's no stopping.
Brilliant stuff. Well,
you got a lovely message from Jim McGuinness. Oscar was feeling quite low at a point, and I was at an event. Jim McGuinness was there, Greg, and he sent Oscar a lovely message of support. You know, and that just means the world. Things like that we have people recognizing the condition. You know, he sat down and I explained the condition to him, you know, and he sent Oscar a video. So things like that, but it's the daily challenges that Oscar has, you know, that have to be highlighted, that this has to be accepted, you know, by people. This is uncontrollable. It's a neurological condition that he can't control, these tics, and who knows what the future brings. But, you know, people, it's more to get an understanding of the condition out there, that it's not portrayed as just being these swear words that people have. Yes, that can be a symptom, but I think there's a very, very small minority that have this condition that it does escalate to.
Yeah, for sure. And I suppose maybe for those who swear, it's more obvious in a way. And in Oscar's, it's slightly more hidden, in that people might not know precisely what's going on. But in terms of awareness, Oscar, firstly, you know, 80,000 people listen to this radio station every day, all of your school, all their mums and dads, granny and granddads. I mean, you're doing amazing work already in helping people understand what it is and what life is like for you, Oscar. And the fact that you're doing so well is a sign too that it's not going to hold you back. Isn't that right?
Yeah.
Good man. Well,
we'll make sure it doesn't hold him back. He's remarkable.
Hey, don't use too ruin that child, right? Last words to Oscar. I mean, obviously the swearing in the film, and I mean that his Tourette's manifests itself through swearing. But would you, Oscar, recommend the film to people if they keep in mind that Tourette's affects people in different ways? Oscar, would you recommend the film for people to watch?
Definitely.
What would you give it out of 10?
Probably a 10.
Not a 6, 7, no. What's wrong? All right, listen, anything, Joy, Melanie, anything either of the two you want to want to mention? I suppose I think, do you know, this reminds me of lots of different things we talk of. Let's not judge people without understanding exactly what makes us all so amazing, the fact that we're different, right? I mean, Oscar's amazing because he's Oscar. And that's to be celebrated.
That's it. We wouldn't change him for the world. He's unique. And I keep saying to Oscar, wouldn't it be a weird world we live in where we're all the same? We're all unique and have our own things to deal with and our own ways. And this is just Oscar's way. But it's good that people, you know, acknowledge, you know, the condition and how he feels as well. Sort of get it out there that, you know, it does have an effect on them. And it's just people really educating themselves and supporting anybody they see with it.
That's great. He's the two schools that he's been to, that was primary school, his senko was amazing, got him, and you know what the waiting lists are like for CAMHS. He attends CAMHS through them. He's been given support in school support. The Dry Arch Centre, Colleen's been brilliant, like sensory support, and now he's transitioned to the big school. They have been amazing as well, and they're wanting to learn, and they're wanting to know about it, and some of the things they have in place for him is amazing. Ms. McCartney and Mr. Douglas and Kira,
all
getting a mention.
One thing very clear is he's got amazing people around him as well. So he's a very lucky boy. Oscar, it's been lovely chatting to you. Lovely to meet a fellow Lewis Capaldi fan. I didn't get a wave. I was up in the nosebleed section at the back while you were at the front getting your personal waves and your Jim McGuinness messages and I don't know. Anyway, look, thanks for joining me. Are you enjoying your Easter break, Oscar?
Yes.
Are you in first year?
Yeah.
Oh, not so bad. Big school's different, isn't it? All right, Joy, listen, thank you. Melanie, lovely to meet you, Melanie, too.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us all, Greg, and for highlighting
this. Nice chatting to you. And Zane, just a reminder, let's not judge, let's understand. And if you want to understand a bit more, and understand that swearing's only a factor, it's only a tick in inverted commas for certain people, not all, then do a bit of research on it or watch the film. All right, thank you very much, Oscar. Look after yourself, buddy. Thanks, Melanie. Thanks, Joy.
Thanks.
Rightio, back in studio with us after a break is Katie McGee, formerly of this parish, now a very important member of a different organisation, Cara House, active age coordinator, in fact, with Cara House Family Resource Centre. Thanks, Katie, for calling in. How are you keeping?
I'm very well. How are you?
That is good. I'm doing fantastic. And it's always busy with you guys, right?
Yeah.
But we are coming into Social Inclusion Week. Lots of different organisations with lots of different things going on. What are you guys doing?
Yeah, so the years previous, we kind of had a kind of more tame approach to Social Inclusion Week. Like, we did have things that we've done historically, like the social inclusion dance I'll talk about in a minute. But last year we amped it up.
Mm-hmm.
Said, let's
turned it up to 11.
Let's go wild with this thing. So we incorporated World Music Celebration Day.
Brilliant, good idea.
Doesn't that sound like super impressive, right?
Yeah. I mean, why was this not thought of before?
I know, like just a pure like gold. But anyway, we start off in the morning on Monday morning, the 13th of April, we have the community guards coming in to run a Garda coffee morning for people. Now, they kind of bring in their own treats. We do the tea and coffee and we provide the room, and kind of it's lovely because our service users and other community members can come in. That gets them to see our building and what we're about, and then also the guards get to do their thing.
And apparently
there as well.
Garda Grania Doherty has already got a scone in the oven, which is fantastic, in preparation. She's building up to bring her baked treats. Well, listen, so that's Monday, the 13th of April. Yeah. From can you believe it's the 13th of April?
I know.
On Monday?
I can't.
11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. So is that for people just associated with Car House, or is that open to the public?
Absolutely not. Anyone can call in. Anyone who wants to call in, get a cup of tea. The great thing about it is it kind of runs quite seamlessly into our event downstairs. So, so we kind of have, that going on upstairs.
So this is where you're tying in then World Music Celebration Day. And you've got some amazing things lined up.
Yeah, yeah. Now, last year when we did this, we had to open the front doors and the back doors and everything because there's so many people that it drew. I couldn't even put a number on it, but it probably wasn't within safe.
Hence the doors being opened.
Exactly. Yeah. So so this year what we've done is, and again, it's probably not an inclusive approach, but we just have to mind our boundaries in terms of how many people we can accept in. So we have a free Eventbrite ticket booking system this year. So we ask people who are interested in coming to the World Music Celebration Day, if they go to Eventbrite and look us up, you'll find us there. And the link is actually on our Facebook page as well. If you want to come along to that, that you just book your place. Mm-hmm. It's not that we're like looking to keep anyone out, but we're fair in our approach.
Exactly. You have to look after numbers. It's free. You're just asking people to pre-register. Yeah. Gives an idea of numbers, capacities, etc. So what's coming up then for World Music Celebration Day in the afternoon of next Monday?
Yeah, so we're going to start now. I had said around 1, but it more than likely the music will start between 1:15, 1:30. We're there for the whole afternoon anyway, so there's no rush. But we're going to start off with the New Land Choir. I think you've had them in here before as well. They're kind of like a world, like there's all of the members of the choir are from all different areas.
Yeah, they bring
of the world.
All different musical styles and inspiration together.
Exactly.
They're really quite remarkable.
It is. It's lovely. They actually each member will bring something from their own country, and then the whole choir learns that song. So it's very,
and it's the international language. It's the language they all can speak, and it's really interesting to see an instrument. You know, I won't name a particular area because I might get it wrong, but playing something that's traditionally Irish, or a fiddle playing something that's traditionally African, or something. It is a lovely blend of music. So that's the New Land Choir kicking things off shortly after 1:15. The children of Cara Children's Centre will perform some Irish songs. And they have had an audience with the president as well. Yeah. So this is a bit of a downgrade.
This is these are the stars of the show, right? We're probably save the best to last there, but we do have, they will come in and perform, including my little daughter as well.
Why wouldn't you book them?
I know. Book them, I got them for a discount.
Yes, family rate. The Cara House Spanish classes are taking part as part of the individually as part of the choir, or
no, individually they're learning songs. Now Lara, our Spanish teacher, is probably the most popular woman in Letterkenny. I can't even tell you. We've 5 Spanish classes.
That's remarkable.
And
why is there such an interest in Spanish?
I don't know.
I suppose maybe it's retirement, or is it people? It's not Spanish people, obviously. Is it? Yeah. Is people of different nationalities?
I think a lot of people do go to Spain for their holidays. And I also do think that there's a lot of people who have holiday homes and that kind of thing over in Spain as well.
Yeah.
But I do believe that a lot of it is word of mouth with her way of teaching and how enjoyable her classes are.
And also,
nobody leaves, do you know?
Yeah, and learning a language. It's not just the language you're learning, you're working the brain. And now, obviously, also, hopefully, members of the Donegal Youth Service will be there. Refreshments, teas, coffees and stuff throughout the day. And a special guest, actually. Who's that?
Yes, Victor Yalamo. Now, I'm really hoping I'm pronouncing his name correctly. And
Victor Yalamo.
Okay, thank you.
Just say it with confidence. I'll never be wrong.
Yes, you are absolutely right. So he's a professional cellist, and this comes part
of... So he plays a cello.
A cello, I know, because I was writing in my press release, celloist.
Yeah.
But apparently that's not correct.
Yeah, well, he's off on the program quite regularly too. That's why I know his name is Victor Yelamo.
Yes, no, well, we're looking for. I'm excited actually to kind of.
So
see.
There's a real mix of, you know, there's a real lovely mix of sounds and people for the afternoon.
Yeah.
Just to remind you that purely because of the popularity of it last year. It's a completely free event, but to keep a handle on numbers, you have to book your free ticket at Eventbrite, and you can go to the Car House Facebook page, which is the easiest, but we'll also link it to ours. And it's open to all adults.
Adult community members, yes, indeed, yeah.
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 But if you perform, you can go. Don't worry about that, kids.
We'll send them back to the children's centre when they're finished. So it's like proper, you know.
Get away now. You've performed. It's adult time. Yeah, so that's a lovely day. So it kicks off at 11 a.m. with the Got a Coffee Morning with treats and tea and coffee. Then continues downstairs from 1:15 ish. You've got Victor Yelamo performing. You've got the Divisional and Donegal Music Partnership, the Newland Choir, the Children of Cara Children's Centre performing, that Spanish classes coming together and performing, which I think is cool as well, and so much more besides. So it's a full, and I presume, busy but lovely last year.
Really busy, really busy. But again, so nice. And like that, there was people, it was totally full, but we like that there's some lovely treats and people kind of get up and walk around and, you know, and they kind of get their cup of tea and come back and sit. It's not structured enough that it's a very tight kind of, you know, sit there and listen kind of jazz. It's you get up and you wander around, you enjoy, you can get up and have a sway if you want and all that kind of thing. I'll just clarify that Victor's participation is funded by the Donegal County Council Arts and Cultural Division and the Donegal Music Partnership.
That's brilliant for Victor. When is Donegal County Council going to fund my involvement in something?
I know.
They said I'm too old to be an influencer.
I know. Also,
is that what they said, Caroline? I thought I was too old. My demographic wasn't right.
You might have to learn a musical instrument as well.
I see Noel Cunningham going around Donegal in a camper van. What? Why can't I get some DCC money? What's going on?
It's hard to come by.
Who did he go with? Was it, who did he go around in the camper van? Well, I think the council that funded that. And well, maybe that was Fulcharden. Yeah. So my demographic, it's not.
I know. I think maybe they just can't afford you. That's probably
oh, no.
Yes.
Trust me, they can afford me. Katie, you can afford me. Right.
Again,
okay. Listen, it's wonderful to see you again. It's great to see that you're doing so well and making such a positive contribution to the Cara House Family Resource Centre. And you're going to have a fantastic Monday. And it's just one tiny little step, but don't let it discourage you so that they don't have too many people and others being disappointed. Book your free tickets on Eventbrite. It's a simple click through on the Cara House Facebook page, and we'll link it on our Facebook page once me and Katie get a picture after we're finished. How's that?
Perfect.
The Donegal County Council Arts and Cultural Funding.
I know. And terrible, right? Okay. Friday the 17th, Social Inclusion Dance, which is basically a facilitated dance by Celine Kerwin, our dance instructor up in the Regional Cultural 7.
Oh, that was on
page 2. Oh, see? just throw it in there. Everyone's welcome to go up. You don't need to book. Go on ahead up.
It's always popular, that, isn't it?
It's very popular. Yeah. And this is the one that we kind of do every year. And actually, the guys up who are organising Social Inclusion Week for Donegal actually asked us, are we doing this again this year?
Fantastic.
So they are. So it is one that that people seem to enjoy. So 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. There will be a break
Friday
with refreshments. Friday the 17th. And we welcome all members of the public to that, adult members of the public to that.
Okay. Very good. Thank you so much. That's Katie McGee, who is the Active Age Coordinator with Cara House Family Resource Centre. Two dates for your diary, next Monday and next Friday. Details on the Cara House Facebook page. Right, now let's say good morning to a native of beautiful Inver in South Donegal, Dr. Peter Coyle. Good morning to you, Peter.
Good morning.
Thank you so very much for joining us. Now, we're all watching on with great wonder to Armatus 2, but no more so more than you, I would say, Dr. Cole, because you, as a scientist, were involved in Apollo 11 and had a hand in helping man land on the moon. Talk to me about your role.
Well, I went to America in 1963 to go to the University of Minnesota with a postdoc fellowship. Then I joined a company called the Dow Chemical Company in Midland, Michigan. And I was in charge of the epoxy resin business there. And one of the things component in the heat shield was the Dow Epoxy Nova-like resin. And that's how we got involved. But the way you have to understand the background to how we all worked together, because when Kennedy said on May 25th, 1961, that the American objective was to land on the moon, mankind on the moon, in competition with the USSR, of course. And at that stage in 1961, this was primitive. We didn't have any iPhones or high-powered computers, and nobody knew how you could get to the moon. So what happened was he assigned it to the American Army, who was developing what's called a Redstone missile. And unfortunately, the Redstone missiles were totally unreliable. And they canceled that program in 1958 and brought in two Germans. You probably know these two Germans, von Braun and Konrad Dannenberg, who did the German rocket V1, V2 in the Second World War. Now, they built a huge engine. Actually, it had 1.5 million pounds of thrust. That was enough to lift 130 tons. And that was got by strapping six big engines together. So that was the rocket. And the Germans did it.
How would you sell that? I mean, how do you sell that? Right, we're going to strap six big rockets together. In terms of the heat shields, Peter, would they be relied on for re-entry, etc.? Like, I'm trying to think in terms of critical components. This is literally the entire mission and the safety of the crew rests on these components.
Absolutely, because when the reentry, the mothership, you know, where they were lying in a stainless steel capsule, it hits the Earth's atmosphere at about 17,000 miles an hour. And what happens is the heat generated is about 5,000 degrees Fahrenheit on the front of the heat shield. Now, what is a heat shield? The heat shield is something that throws heat away from the capsule itself. And the capsule is a stainless steel big thing where the three astronauts were strapped in. And the heat shield was a honeycomb structure made of fiberglass, just like bees, you know, beeswax, filled with honey, except it was filled with Dow Epoxy Novalac, which is a phenolic resin, and graphite, which burns at about 4,000 degrees centigrade, and a few other things. And that had to be glued onto the stainless steel thing. Mm. So what we did is we manufactured the special Novalac. We shipped it to California to an outfit called Hysol. And Hysol then formulated and shipped it to Avco in Massachusetts. And Massachusetts glued it on. There was 370,000 honeycombs on this heat shield, and each one had to be filled by hand with mm-hmm. this special component. And the secret of the thing was that when it burns, it what called the ablates. And you know what ablation is. You know, when you get a goo, it goes to gas, mm-hmm. the gas stuff. So the best description I can tell you of this principle is, in chemistry, they call it sputtering. And if you cook your porridge in the morning and you look at this gooey mass, which is your porridge, you'll see all these bubbles coming out of it. And these bubbles are carrying the heat away from the bottom of the pot.
Ah, right, okay.
It's a very simple process. But you have to work it at, you know, very high temperatures.
You do,
high
but how much of, you know, there's a great deal of reliance on science, on testing, on other people's presumption, because a lot of this is being done for the very first time. How nervous were you watching, with all the testing, with all the knowledge, how nervous were you watching as they were tested, as these heat shields and the resin were tested in real time? That must have been, or maybe you were so confident in the science, doctor, that you were very relaxed.
No, the odds were 50-50 that this thing would fail or succeed, depending on which side you're on. And we were sitting in our office in Michigan, and we were feeling like, I would say, spectators waiting for Ireland to play Scotland in the rugby, the Six Nations.
Because I have access to you now, I want to do... Can you absolutely for us, Peter, dispel any notion that this never happened and that all the footage we've seen was genuine? I know you can. I'm just asking you to do so because I trust you so implicitly.
Oh, I've seen that on YouTube and where have you, and it's really ridiculous stuff. It's childish. Mm. I mean, that's about all I can say.
Why do you think it's taken us so long to get back there? We're not there yet, right? Artemis 2 is laying the pathway, but we've had such advances in technology, etc. Why do you think it's taken us so long to get back there? Is it the way or the will?
Well, it's political will. And the Americans didn't have any competition when the Soviet Union collapsed, basically. And the Soviets didn't have the money or the skills to do it, go any further. I think it's a combination of all those things. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, just when Kennedy announced in 61, we didn't get them there till 69, and that cost $24 billion.
Yes.
Which in today's money is $215 billion.
Wowzers. Yeah.
So that's the sort of scale you're looking at, money.
Okay. I'd love to speak to you in a longer format, Peter. I really, really would, because there's so many questions that I have, not least your Inver connections and so much else that went on at that time. I really appreciate your time. And maybe, I know you're busy, you might facilitate a longer form conversation at some point into the future. But for now, thank you very much indeed.
That's okay. Thank
Look
you.
After yourself. That's Dr. Peter Coyle, a native of Inver and a scientist involved in Apollo 11 and helped land man on the moon. Dispelling any myth that or any suggestion that it never actually happened.
Business Matters is proudly sponsored by Prince Applies Frosses. With 21 years in business, Prince Applies provides managed print solutions with local support and remote ink monitoring, saving your business time and money. Prince Applies, your local printer and photocopier company.
My notes say Chris Ashmore, presenter of the Business Matters podcast, topics for young Greg. Did you write that?
Yes.
Thank you, Chris.
Just wanted to bring a smile to your face.
Oh, okay. All right. So lying to me makes me smile? No, I'm only joking.
You are young, Greg.
I am. I feel young. Donegal Dublin Business Network. Big organisation connecting the northwest to the capital.
Yes, they've done a lot of good work and they have a big, big event taking place in the Grand Canal Hotel in Dublin on Thursday, April the 16th. So that's next Thursday. It's a networking dinner. The theme is building a billion euro business. And the guest speaker will be Frosses man Donna Kelly, who's the CEO of Circuit, who have been involved, of course, in laying cables and developing the infrastructure for a lot of the broadband that we have all around the country and indeed further afield. Also, there'll be a business mentor, Bart McEnroe, there, and Andrea Gilligan of News Talk will be the MC. It's a big night, and no doubt that will be a sellout.
Yeah, the local enterprise office business support clinics, there's an update on them.
Yes, just to let you know, the next business support clinic takes place in Donegal Town on the 24th of April. And this is really a great chance to get an overview of what supports are available. You can contact the local enterprise office for more details on that.
And the Donegal Women in Business Network, always very active.
Indeed, and they are holding a series of coffee mornings. Now, they've done this on a number of occasions. The date this year, Friday the 17th of April, all at 10 o'clock. This is a great way for women to go along, no pressure at all, have a chat, meet people in business. Mount Errigal Hotel in Letterkenny, McElhinney's in Balbuffet, the Fairy Glen Cafe Bistro in Gwydor, and the Inishowen Innovation Centre on St. Oran's Road in Buncrana, all at 10 o'clock, all free, and that is next Friday week, April the 17th.
Brilliant stuff. Very interesting guest, as always, of course, on the podcast this week, where you can have a deep dive conversation, Chris.
Yes, indeed. I've been speaking with Caroline Sweeney, who's the managing partner of Castlegrove Country House Hotel, just outside Letterkenny, and she recently became the president of Letterkenny Chamber. So we spoke about chamber matters and indeed the hospitality sector, which, of course, she's well acquainted with, tourism, She's great belief in the future of this county, and despite the challenges facing businesses out there, we have a couple of clips about her. First of all, she's speaking about just the importance of her role and the importance of the chamber in being able to represent local businesses.
People want that. They want the great outdoors. They want a healthier lifestyle. That is what people are looking for. They want to be able to have that healthier environment to live in. And we offer that. And we have the capacity, which is really important to say as well. So it's really important that we get the supports that we need and the funding, and that things move a little bit faster. I know we were talking offline before we came on about, you know, it's so frustrating that everything takes so long. We really do need to get things moving quicker. We do need the supports. We have amazing businesses here. We have businesses who want to come here. We have the capacity to house people in a healthier, lovely countryside environment. And we want, more importantly, we want to contribute. We want to be part of the net economy. So let us in the game.
Castle Grove House obviously has its modern appeal, but very much grounded in its history too, Chris.
Yes, indeed. And here she just explains a little bit about the background and what a great story there is behind the property.
So basically, Castle Grove Country House was built in 1695. The house itself, and this is sitting on 220 acres here in the shores of Lough Swilly, was owned by the Grove family. Now, if you date back to that period, it was many more acres. There was a couple of thousand acres with it at that time. And it stayed in the Grove family, Anglo-Irish family, and it was handed down through the generations right up until 1968, when the last major Grove passed it on to a gentleman called Commander Peter Campbell. At that time, they had no direct heirs, so he was the next of kin to them. And he was married to Lady Moira Hamilton from Barons Court. So they took the house in the late 1960s, 1970, and at that time, as you know, it was the beginning sort of the troubles, or the peak of the troubles, I should say. So there's a little bit of uncertainty there for them at that time, living here in Donegal. But really, they had no issues. They did stay here for a few years, and they had no problems, really. It was when their two boys decided to go to school in England, and they were coming less and less, and the house, as you know, big houses, big, particularly big old houses with heating and preservation and, you know, no one in them. It's very quickly damp sets in, and the other problems come along with that. So they were coming here. They had a housekeeper and a land steward here for some years. But again, with that, the expense was probably a little bit too much as well. So they kept the house until through the 80s, and in 1988 the house went on the market in a private sale, and at that point my parents were successful in the purchasing of the house at that time.
That podcast available for you to listen back to in full a little later on today. It's broadcast after the 6 o'clock news on Sunday. And Chris, if anyone wants to contact you?
Businessmatters@highlandradio.com.
That's where we leave it on the show today. We'll be back with you tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock.